This is The Wolves, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Dexter, crossover fic, written by Faith Unbreakable, read by Raina Jenkins. The story is rated somewhere between PG-13 and R. Warnings, those first of all. If you've read or watched Dexter, please proceed. If you have not, this is your warning for blood, gore, homicidal sociopaths, and not nice things. The story takes place pre-series for Dexter, post a slightly altered season 2 for Buffy. Playmate. Working for the police has taught Dexter more than just how to wipe his traces effectively. It has also taught him to recognize the true monsters, the wolves without a sheepskin to hide their darkness inside. He wants to call it his little secret about what goes bump in the night, besides him, that is, but since most of the police force know about this kind of monster, he can't. But there's a point to this, and the point is that, as he walks through the soft Miami night, hands in his pockets, coming down from a kill, he recognizes the monster walking past for what it is. He also recognizes the girl the monster has tucked into his side for what she is. Prey. Or so he thinks, until she turns her head as they walk past him and meets his cool gaze. She meets it with green eyes, with two tiny reflections of himself and nothing else inside. Then their moment passes, gaze is broken, and he finds himself stopping, waiting, and then following the couple into the nearest dark alley. Usually, these scenes tend to look a lot alike. A big bag of vampire, sucking a cute little girl dry to the last drop while she tries to scream but can't, fear rising from her as something tangible, a cloud of reeking panic, before the corpse is left there with the other trash for someone to find and no one to mourn. This scene, however, looks a bit different. The vampire has friends waiting for him and his happy meal in the alley, and the girl doesn't try to scream. Instead, she stops, disentangles herself from the dead weight of the arm put around her, and grins. "Ooh," she coos. "You brought friends!" Dexter leans against the wall at the mouth of the alley, watching the scene unfold with his head tilted to one side, curiously. He does so rarely get to see something worth his time. The first vampire lunges for her, fingers curled into claws, fangs extended, sure of his superiority. The girl slips to the side, brings up her left arm, and slices the vampire open from crotch to collarbone. Dexter shifts. She's good. He didn't see the knife coming. Howling, the first vampire drops, clutching his chest. It's an unnecessary motion because the cut is too shallow to spill his guts on the floor. There's only blood. A lot of it, but nothing more sinister. This wound will not kill him, would not even kill a human. Dexter is good at knowing these things. The next one gets a fist to his face and a mouthful of flying blonde hair as she spins and kicks out, breaking the third one's knees. He crumbles to the floor like a vampire with his legs all fucked. The girl spins the knife in her hand so the hilt, made of wood and a lot pointier than it should be, how tricky, points forward, and then the first vampire explodes in a cloud of dust. Dexter frowns. That was anticlimactic. He expected more. He gets it when the other two come at her from both sides. One gets an elbow to his gut, the other a knife across his throat. More blood. Another cut at the shoulder, one at a thigh. She is carving them up, killing them slowly, drop by drop, playing with them. It looks like pointless rage as she cuts them to ribbons, but Dexter can see the pattern underneath, can see her eyes shift and move. She's not mad. She is always one step ahead of them, planning, moving just right, never wasting a motion. She's art. After a few minutes, the dance ends when the mice are too bled out to still put up a fight, and the cat grows bored. She spins her knife again, delivers a last kick, and then puts them out of her misery. At the mouth of the alley, Dexter claps. She whirls around, eyes wide in surprise, hiding the knife behind her back. It's all fake. She knew he was there all along, watching. "Nice work," he comments, idly, languidly. "Thank you." She looks suspicious. Could it be that she hasn't seen in his eyes what he saw in hers? That she doesn't understand? "What are you doing out here?" she asks before he can answer his own questions, and he takes his chance because he knows what he saw. He saw himself in that girl, and he can't just let her walk away. He's never met anyone like himself before. Taking out the trash. She musters him, takes in his clothes, his watch, his shoes, and retorts, "In the wrong neighborhood?" He shrugs. "My trash was the humankind." She tucks away her knife, shifts on her feet, and mutters, "Great, a nutcase killer is just what I needed tonight." He chuckles, and she glares at him. "So you're one of the monsters too, are you?" A shrug. "I only take out the trash, like I said. Tonight it was an arsonist." He can't quite resist the dreamy little smile that crosses his face. He never thought it would actually feel this good to say these things out loud. Even Harry, the quiet teacher and maker of everything Dexter is, never wants to hear. No innocence? Interesting question. No, that's what Harry taught him. That's the code. He's never broken the code. But he's never met anyone who had a code too, either. He grins. No innocence. No sheep. Only wolves. They taste better. His grin turns into a flash of teeth, too white in the dark. How do I know you're telling the truth? Or, better yet, why are you telling me this at all? Head cocked to one side, he blinks rather slowly. She can't read herself in his eyes, can't feel the echo of her hollow resonating in him. She doesn't know. I'm like you. And she holds her breath in anticipation, surprise, and blind hope, waiting for something she probably never realized she needed before. Little bird with a broken wing. He releases her. He says, I'm empty too. She exhales. For a minute. One that is not an eternity, but simply a minute because that is what they are. Clean, precise, logical, surgical, not dreamers. They stare at each other. Look and see things that no one else has ever seen. Things that skitter away from the light like cockroaches. Things that love the darkness and the sweet, aching tang of blood on their tongues. They haven't always been like this. They were human once. But at one point, all humanity just bled out, and the blankness in their eyes always gives them away. It's like a secret handshake, only not. A brotherhood, forged in blood and death and terror. And they are part of it. When the minute has passed, she nods. Whether to herself or to him, he doesn't know. But she sees him now, has found her reflection in him as surely as he found his in her the second their eyes met for the first time. And they connected. Funny how two people who have never before connected to anyone can connect to each other, but they have. They're the same. He doesn't know why or how. All he knows is that he has found someone like him. Better even. Dexter knows that he is a man among insects. The ease with which he fools them, kills them, disposes of them, is proof of his superiority. He does not muddle through day after day of emotion and turmoil. He sees the whole picture, sharp and clear. He recognizes things for what they really are. But she, this tiny blonde thing, she is a goddess among men. If she decides to kill him, she will. She can. Her prey is bigger than his will ever be. Smarter, harder to kill. The monsters she kills are not sniveling little human sacks of waste that beg for their lives like his are. No, she hunts only big game, true predators. Dexter is a different kind of monster from all the rest, but she could kill him just as she killed those vampires. Watching her at work was like watching a master do his art, and Dexter feels humbled. Do you need a place to crash? The offer is out before he knows it, tainted by the desire to keep her close, to watch her some more. To watch the precision in her movements, the stealth in her steps, the death in her hands. She blinks, surprised perhaps, and then nods. Why should she not? She can take him and whatever he throws at her, and no runaway. And she is a runaway, no doubt about that. Ever turns down free bed and board. And she knows now, sees now. You cannot fear yourself. She picks up her discarded bag, shrugs, and follows him out of the alley. Her feet barely disturb the newly settled dust. Dexter watches every step she takes, and he knows that the slip of a girl in front of him is a whole new kind of animal, one he has never seen before. But inside, deep in his guts, he can't help but feel a sort of excitement. Stop and fade. She crashes at his place for one night, then two. On the third evening, she packs her stuff and leaves without a word. She's found a job in a cheap room, and so she goes. It's not that she feels guilty about intruding on his life and exploiting his hospitality. It's just that people like them are self-reliant to a fault, and all predators need their own territory. They stifle each other. Besides, it's a game. She leaves, and he finds her, first by finding out her alias, then by finding the diner she works at and following her home. And finally, he sneaks after her as she goes out to hunt, and before long he finds himself by her side 2 or 3 nights a week, getting pointers on a sort of self-defense even Harry never taught him. It's the kind of self-defense that has nothing to do with fairness and safety, and everything with how quickly you can disable your opponent and then ram a stake through their heart. And while he learns to use his fingers to claw a man's throat to shreds, she toys with her prey, bleeds it, hunts it, plays games only she knows the rules of. She does it with a desperate thirst, a hunger for destruction and pain. In that, they are so, so alike. They do not kill for some greater purpose. They kill because they want to, and fit their actions into a greater scheme, give it a purpose, out of convenience. It keeps the monkeys off their backs, and the dark insides well fed. It stills the hunger. But they are still human. Sort of. And humans have human needs, and so it's Chinese takeaway tonight, and a game show rerun in her run-down shoebox of an apartment. He amuses them both by telling her a silly story from work when some sauce catches in the corner of her mouth, and before he knows what he's doing, Dexter leans forward and licks it away. She jerks back, chopsticks suddenly gripped like a weapon instead of a tool. "What'd you do that for?" she asks. Her voice is even. He shrugs and takes another bite of his chop suey. "I felt like it." That's what he likes about being with her. No pretenses, no lies. If he doesn't want to tell her something, he doesn't. But what he says is always the truth. And the truth is that he felt like kissing her, and possibly fucking her, simply for the release, the pleasure of the act without having to lie and pretend to find anything more than base animal desire. She looks at him over her own carton of food for a moment, before deciding to believe him and drop it. But she doesn't make any effort to respond to his first move. In fact, she stays where she is, farther away from him than before. Then, after another few minutes, she asks out of the blue, "Do you remember how you became like this?" He shakes his head. "I was too small. I remember nothing from before I was adopted." Shoveling food in her mouth, she thoughtfully stares at the TV for a while before saying, "I do." That surprises him. She's so smooth, so perfect, so very graceful in what she does, killing monsters, spilling blood. He didn't think she was new to this. "I had a boyfriend. I loved him. And he went totally psychopath on me. He killed and stalked and tortured my friends and my mom. He left me bodies for gifts, teased me, taunted me. And every time I thought, that's it. This time he crossed a line. Every time I thought I could free myself of him, he came to me at night with gentle hands and sweet words, and I let him. I loved him, right? And he broke me. Again. I remember the exact moment it all just stopped. Suddenly there was only me left and nothing else. No hate, no love, no fear. Not even grief. I was..." Her hands spread wide, the motion of setting free a bird. "Empty." The word is damning in its simplicity, but it's the only one that fits them. Dexter puts his food down, folds his hands in his lap, and watches her face. She doesn't cry, doesn't even blink. She remembers emotions, but they mean nothing to her. It's all been washed clean. "What happened to him?" "I looked him in the eye, told him I loved him, and then stuck a sword into him." He expected nothing else. But neither does he expect the next question. "Do they come back? The emotions, I mean." "Do you want them back?" Silence. "I don't know. I think I miss being happy. feeling good about something other than killing. I miss looking at someone and feeling warm. But being like I am now, it's... I don't worry. I don't need. I don't hurt. It's all simple now. Easy. I can live or I can die, and it doesn't matter either way. I'm not afraid anymore. Or anything. I don't think they come back. I mean, we just pretend they're there, and who knows, maybe one day they might be. Until then, you adapt. It stops feeling strange eventually. It's all he can offer. Truth, nothing more. Truth is hard and cold, like surgical steel, and just as comforting to him. He never understood the need to be smothered in soft, feathery lies that choke you when you breathe them in. She understands that, too. Good, she whispers. Good. They are twice born, him and her. They were born once as humans and again as monsters. He doesn't remember his first life, but she does. It makes no difference. In the end, they are the same. She'll learn to pretend. She'll learn to paste a happy face over the yawning void inside of her. She'll survive. It's what they do. Burn. Eventually, Harry catches on to his son's new pastime, Buffy time. Usually that wouldn't bother Dexter overly much, but Harry is different. Harry knows. Harry's wants cannot be ignored like those of others, because everything Dexter is, he owes to Harry. So, with all the awkwardness of a boy asking his girlfriend to meet his parents, he invites Buffy over to Sunday lunch. Of course, he's timed it carefully, so that his sister is out of town with her latest boyfriend, and he bribes Buffy with a nice dinner to assure her compliance. Just because Harry is Harry and gets what he wants does not mean that Dexter forgets all the lessons he's ever been taught. When the actual meeting happens, Harry is leaning in the frame of the back door, trying to stare down a tiny blonde and stay upright at the same time. The doctors say he has another couple months at the most, but Dexter, bloodhound of death and its dealers, knows better. 6 months, maybe more. Still, the man is weak as a kitten some days. Buffy looks right back at him, face set in neutral lines, and Harry can't help but notice how young she is. In jeans and a faded band shirt, her hair in a loose blonde ponytail and wearing little makeup, she looks like a child next to his 27-year-old son. He smiles as Dex introduces her, nods in all the right places, and then moves aside to let them in. They brought bags with groceries and take over the kitchen like they've done it a million times before. His son parks him in a kitchen chair as if he's an invalid, and the two of them start preparing lunch. Dexter cooks the same way he does everything else, meticulously, by the rules. Neat, with the occasional unpredictable break of order thrown in. A deeply disturbed and even more deeply logical mind spelled out in pasta and noodles. It's edible, at least, and that's more than one can say for Deb's cooking. So Dexter cooks, and Buffy, God, who named that child, chops his onions for him and stirs when he tells her to. And the way she handles the knife is chilling. They make small talk. Buffy is 17. Not quite as young as she looks, but too young to be anywhere but at school. And she works as a waitress. She's from California and talks little of her actual past, staying vague and polite at all times. Finally, when the pasta is done and the spaghetti almost, she shoos Dex out of the kitchen to go set the table and returns to cutting up tomatoes for the salad. "Don't you think my son is a bit old for you?" he asks out of the blue. He's been polite for this long, but now he wants answers. Answers for why his son, so private, so strange and alien, spends all his time with this girl. She doesn't even stop the repetitive motion of slice, turn, slice, push the pieces away to the side, repeat. She just keeps going, eyes fixed on her hands. Do you think the thing you should be worrying about is really my age? She sneaks a look at him out of the corner of her eyes, and Harry feels cold creeping up his spine. He knows that look. Knows it because he's seen it in his son's eyes when he stopped pretending for just a moment. It's a look that chills him to the bone every time he sees it. Of course, he should have known. Why else would Dexter strike up a friendship with such an unlikely person? Why else would he actually sound like he cared when talking about her? Why, if not for the fact that this girl is just like him? You're like him. It's out before he knows it. She finishes her tomato, puts down the knife, turns. No, not quite. Behind Harry, something moves. Dexter is back from setting the table out in the garden. He leans against the door jamb, and the expression on his face is familiar, too. It's the one he always got on their little hunting trips when he was handed a knife. Excitement. Anticipation. Buffy takes a few steps into the room, closer to Harry in his chair, feeling frail and old suddenly. I remember what it's like to feel. I remember what made me cold. I remember rage, anger. I remember hate. She burns. Where Dexter is cold and precise, she is hot. Just as precise, but her weapon is not cold surgical steel, but a white-hot knife dug deep into a wound, burning, cauterizing, killing what is left of her soul. She burns to the heavens, a pillar of flame that cannot be controlled, cannot be directed. Dexter and his cold, empty insides were moldable. Dexter has rules, has a code. Dexter is in control, as much as this girl is out of it. Through the idle calm of shocked surprise, Harry wonders which way the scales will tip. Will Dexter's neat order of things rub off on this wild, empty child? Or will the bold carelessness at her core taint him? Two killers with rules, or two monsters out of control? Which is it going to be? And as that question runs through his mind, Harry lays a hand over his cancer-eaten chest and prays that he will not see the outcome. And then Dex pushes past his father towards the pasta pot, and as he passes Buffy, his hand trails along the small of her back for a second. It's an unconscious little gesture, one full of familiarity and humanity. It's something Dexter has never done in his life. He plans every move he makes, every bit of social interaction, carefully. He avoids all unnecessary human contact at all costs. He never touches people unless he has to, and he certainly never trails a hand down their back in a completely oblivious gesture of fondness. And watching that simple hand, that damning motion, that 1 second of unfettered humanity, Harry knows it was all in vain. Raising Dex, teaching him, keeping him from his brother. He thought that keeping Brian away from Dexter was all it would take to keep Dex, dearly disturbed Dex, under some sort of control. Without the fucked-up older brother there to fill up the empty spaces, Dexter was supposed to be forever the weapon Harry shaped him into. But now? Now he's found someone else to fill the hole, someone else to trust. Another monster under the bed. He wants to have faith in his son, he really does. But he's seen the chasm inside Dex's soul, and he knows it has no bottom. And that tiny, human-looking girl, this blonde whirlwind of hollow eyes and empty smiles, she's bottomless too. Answer. After 3 months, she has relearned to live, mostly. She smiles in the right places, cracks the right jokes, shows the right amount of emotion in all situations. And some of the raging emptiness inside of her has calmed down into sort of quiet hollow. She doesn't feel like she's going to cave in any second anymore. She doesn't kill quite as viciously anymore. In short, she's the best copy of a human being that she can be, and so it's not a sense of duty. Not really. She doesn't know duty. Not anymore. Duty made her slaughter the man she loved, and then everything just stopped. What moves her now is simpler. She knows that if she stays in sunny, deadly Miami with Dexter, she'll eventually slip. She'll become what he kills with such glee. So she's going back to a place where she has cover, people to ground her, and plenty of things to kill. She doesn't say goodbye to Dex. No, not quite. She just clears out her room and gets on the next bus back to California, leaving behind only an envelope on the bed in his apartment. An envelope with nothing but a single name inside. The name of a very, very bad man. She knows Dexter will appreciate the goodbye gift and have lots and lots of fun with it. She goes home. And mostly, she manages to keep up her masks, too. But sometimes she slips. When Angel leaves her in a cloud of smoke, her face can't quite seem to manage that acquired, hurting, doe-eyed expression. When she stabs Faith, there's no properly guilty look, either. Killing Adam is a glorious thing, and the wholesale slaughter that follows gives her a high like she's never felt before. She slips then, too. And then there's Dawn. Dawn, who she knows is fake from day one because she loves her. Buffy hasn't loved anyone in years, doesn't even remember the strange feeling well enough to identify it immediately. But that, too, goes away eventually, settling into a certain fondness, and then... Tell me to kill my sister. She likes Dawn, and she doesn't give a shit about the rest of the world. So why not? Sounds like a workable solution. But, there's always a but. Dexter's words ring in her head, as if she'd only heard them yesterday. No innocence. Part of her, the jaded part that survived Faith and Walsh and so many other bad seeds, says, no such animal. But the rest of her remembers the lesson. No innocence. So she throws herself off the tower, wondering idly who'll cry and who'll break down at her funeral, and really not feeling too bad at all. Those like her always live with the knowledge that they won't live forever. Life is short, bloody, and a glorious playground full of nasty things to kill, and then it's over. It's afterwards, after she ended and came back, that she really slips up. She spends a whole damn year with her mask down, and it costs a lot to get it back up. Almost too much. But she manages, and after a year, she gets her reward. Freedom. So when Dawn, sweet little Dawnie, who has long since become a nuisance more than a joy, asks what she is going to do, Buffy turns to face her sister with a smile that's as empty as she feels inside and says, "Whatever I want." Why? Her smile grows wider. Why the hell not? Skip. Cell phones, Dexter muses, have a stunning habit of always ringing at the worst possible moment. In the middle of a crime scene, for example. The walls, the ceiling, the floor, the furniture, and the bodies. Everything inside the room is covered in blood spatters, as fascinating as they are disgusting. He suppresses a shiver of pleasure and repulsion running down his spine, and makes sure to set the lines of his face in its default, hard-at-work expression. Then he turns to Doakes, mouth open to comment on how gruesome, yes, positively gruesome, poor girls, this whole thing is, and that's when the phone rings. He looks down at the display, telling him in cheerily dancing letters that it's Buffy, bubbly, bottomless Buffy. The smile crosses his face before he can swallow it, and out of the corner of his eye, he catches Doak's startled expression, the shock at seeing a real Dexter smile, after years of trying to see through the fakes. Oops. Bad Dexter, slipping up like that. Somehow, he can't bring himself to care. Not when his special friend is only one button away. He lifts the phone to his ear, presses that one button, and chirps in his best happy voice. "Darling, how wonderful of you to call me! At 2 a.m, no less." She snorts into his ear delicately and responds equally as cheerfully. "Am I interrupting something?" Dexter shakes his head as he steps over the corpse without looking down and ducks under the yellow crime scene tape. He's getting away from Doakes as much as he's looking for a quiet place to talk. "I'm working, actually. Lots of blood for me to analyze." He adds the last bit only because he knows her next question. Knows she's going to ask what kind of work he's doing. The mess-making or the cleaning up. Personally, Dexter thinks both of his jobs have to do with cleaning up, but that's neither here nor there. Either way, this is the kind of question he doesn't want to answer in public. Harry's lessons. Always Harry's lessons. "What's up?" he finally asks when he's past the blue and red blinking barrier of lights and overworked comps. "Let's see. Me, you... Fortunately, none of the zombies my darling sister accidentally raised last week. Do you want me to go on?" The chipper tone is fading out of her voice, fading to something duller and deeper. Less girl, more predator. More of the goddess of blood and death he saw in her when they first met. God, has it really been 10 years already? 10 years since he laid eyes on her and lost what was left of his black little heart to a slip of jailbait? He leans against a wall and doesn't bother putting any sympathy into his voice. Dawn again? I thought you wanted to leave her in Rome and move back to the States. A sigh. Yeah, but... She doesn't have to say any more. But. The great but. The one but that sums it all up for both of them. The rules. The cover. The game. That last shred of her former life that she still clings to after all these years. The one bit she refuses to let go. Duty. Or at least a suitably de-emotionalized version thereof. So she stays with her sister, stays with her friends, plays their games, and tries not to be who she is. It's almost pathetic. Or it would be, if he weren't doing the exact same thing. He has a girlfriend, for fuck's sake. A girlfriend! The mere thought makes him want to break into maniacal laughter and go on a killing spree. Pretty shiny blade, red blood dripping, fake taste of fake life washing away, drop by drop, scream by scream. Why are you calling? No more games now. Dokes is coming his way, lumbering ever close, muscles quivering with the usual suppressed rage. Can you meet me tomorrow? Around lunch? I'll even feed you. You're in town? Surprise. It's not often someone manages to surprise him. Not yet. My flight leaves right about... Now! I gotta go. Can I meet you? Meet me at my place. We'll take it from there. He can hear her smile in her voice, vaguely. Thanks. You're my hero. See ya. She hangs up without saying goodbye, like she always does. But as the dear detective comes to a halt in front of him, Dexter can't quite resist speaking to the dial tone. I'll see you then. Yeah, I love you too. Sweet dreams. He smiles a sugary smile and hangs up on no one. Dokes glares. You're cheating on your girlfriend, Morgan? Planning manslaughter, actually. He says it in a completely deadpan voice. Why shouldn't he? It's probably the truth. Why would Buffy come to him if not for artwork in red and black, with a touch of silvery steel? Certainly not for the conversation, stimulating as that might be. In the end, he and she are the same. Words, to them, are nothing. They mean nothing. Meaning lies in wounds and tears, in cuts and blood and screams ripped from dying throats. Meaning lies in ending things. But the way Dokes glares at him, the usual pointless rage fueled by something else, something sharper and more concrete. Suspicion. He probably shouldn't have introduced manslaughter to the conversation. Double oops. But Dexter just can't help himself. Buffy is coming back. His favorite playmate has set up a playdate. Now she even has him rhyming. With a last grin at the burly man's angry face, he turns and skips to his car. First he'll get some sleep, and then... Well, he'll certainly find a way to kill the time until Buffy arrives. Killing's what he's good at, after all. Lunch. He isn't really surprised when he comes home to find his lock picked and the blonde girl sitting in a swivel chair, spinning madly. He did agree to meet her at his place. Such things as in front of and inside are trivial at best to the two of them. She stops the chair as soon as she notices him watching her and grins up at him. It's a mad little smile full of glee and anticipation. He can see the impulse to jump up and hug him flicker in her eyes and then die. It's part of the mask she wears like a second skin. It's not real. He cocks his head to one side and smiles. You promised to feed me? Yep. A grin splits his face, wide and honest. He's hungry. So he grabs her by the arm and hauls her up, pulling her out of the apartment before she's got her feet back under her, predator or not. Tell me, he says when they are seated and there's nothing more needed. Tell me why you're here. Tell me why you came to me. Tell me why we couldn't talk about on the phone. Tell me. She pulls a small folded sheet of paper out of the pocket of her jeans and pushes it across the table at him, wordlessly. He raises a questioning eyebrow at her as he slowly reaches out, taking the paper. If this were a cheap movie, he would now look around to make sure no one's watching. Since this is reality, he has long since made sure there is nobody within earshot. Besides, he's got the deadliest predator known to man sitting across from him. He's as safe as he's going to get. Manfred Walford. The raised eyebrow again. Oh, he knows what this is. A present. Just like her going away gift to him so many years ago. A name. The name of a bad man. Nothing more. He likes to do his own research. To satisfy the code of Harry as much as for the sheer thrill of the hunt. He did some consulting for us, she says with a shrug. Expert on creepy things and suspicious deaths. He nods with conviction. He deserves to die. He earns himself a kick in the shins for his trouble, but she's smiling. He got up close and personal with one of my girls. One of her girls means one of her slayers. Tiny, imperfect copies of her. Weak, pathetic, so easy to kill. Prey thinking itself predator. She was 7 years old. He left the country before we could get it out of her. She leans closer on her elbows, eyes meeting his across the table, close and familiar, intimate. Her smile as it blooms on her face is more real than any she has smiled in the past 10 years. Guess where he is right now? I'm taking a wild guess and saying, Miami? Her smile grows wider. Hunting a demon I killed last night. She wants this man dead. Wants him slaughtered and squared away, cleaned up and erased for what he's done to one child, any child, every child. She wants him gone. But she won't. Can't do it because it's her line. Dexter's line is between innocent and guilty. Hers, between human and monster. It's a line they can never cross, because if they do, they become what they hunt. They become death. Unorganized, wild, unpredictable, messy death. Dexter hates messy. But he doesn't mind doing a friend a favor and all that. Lazily, he returns her smile. Disobey. They think sociopaths are normal people who like to kill things. People with a few wires crossed. Something went wrong, and this is how they deal. All those cops and profilers, all those hobby forensics that read about serial killers, that's how they think. Even with the bloody proof spelled out in front of them and gurgling screams and tortured pleas, they still try to understand the motive. And that's where they go wrong. They are humans, those watchers, those judges and juries, and even the executioners. Humans that apply human patterns, human thoughts, human emotions. Either the killer never had a chance, or it's a choice they made, a decision to be evil. It's neither. Because people like Dexter, they aren't human. Oh, they started out that way, but they were never meant to stay like that. Like the caterpillar becomes a butterfly. They are all humans that become more, less, different. Human patterns don't apply because there's nothing human there. All there is a plane. Empty, endless, hollow. Sometimes Dexter isn't sure that if he opens his mouth wide enough, he'll see the abyss within. A black hole wrapped in human skin. That's all. Most of his days are spent standing in the middle of that abyss, that plane, doing nothing. Existing. Breathing. He breathes a lot, while his lizard brain dreams of life as something else. He stands there, and then he comes, his shadow brother, his other half. The unseen reflection in the mirror of Dexter's not soul. He comes like a forest growing in the dark. Slowly, unnoticed. But fast at the same time, and merciless. He comes and he wraps Dex up in roots and branches, holds him tight. He makes his heart beat, and wakes the lizard brain to share in the life he brings. He comes like living things in an all-encompassing darkness, comes like a rustling of leaves and the gentle smell of soil and dirt. He comes, and Dexter is not alone on that plane anymore, but two. He is himself and the other. He becomes we. And they dream their dream in the living world, and when the hunger is lulled back to sleep, the sun rises, and the forest recedes to the outer reaches of Dex's doubtful sanity. He never goes away, that brother, that dark passenger. He never leaves. He never fades. He never lets go. He was, before Dexter let him inside, and he still will be, when Dexter is long gone. He is the other, the endless. But at the same time, he is the same. He is himself. And when Dexter looks into Buffy's reflective eyes, he sees himself. Not Dexter, no, but the dark passenger. He is the same in her, and him, and every other killer. He is every man, woman, and child with a knife in their hand and blood dripping from their fingers in a quiet pit-pat rhythm. They are not human. They are empty, all of them, all those butterflies and human-born gods. Hollow, black and endless, except for the gentle rustling of branches in the wind, whispering, "Let go." Who are they to disobey? The end.